This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
Mate, I'm like 19 years old. Like, I can't make To Pimp a Butterfly my first album, you know?
Hello. Welcome to Loud and Quiet's Midnight Chats, or Midnight Chats by Loud and Quiet magazine, whichever way you like it. This is episode 101 with tonight's guest, Arlo Parks, who you may or may not know. She is a new artist. Her debut album is coming out in January. It's called Collapsed in Sunbeams. It's coming out on Transgressive Records, and it's just going to work. It's just going to be one of those records that next year just lands and does really well. I certainly hope that's the case, but I'm quite confident that it will be. We start off our conversation actually talking about why we had to reschedule this podcast. We were going to meet up, and then she had to go to Rome, and I asked her why she was in Rome, and you'll find out why at the beginning of the podcast, and it's impressive. I don't know what else I can tell you about Arlo Parks. I mean, she grew up in West London. She's still only 19 years old. She made her album during lockdown earlier this year in a rented Airbnb, pretty much putting the whole record together herself. And she, her first love is poetry. You know, lyrics are her thing. She's got a great talent in writing lyrics. So it made sense that she would then become a musician. And she also loves horror films and Radiohead and all sorts of music, like everything, essentially. She just loves music. All of that will come out in this podcast. And that's about it from me. Thank you for listening to this episode. I hope you enjoy it. If you enjoy it enough to sling us some money, there's a link in the description of this podcast, as well as some links to some of the things that we talk about. Thank you for listening to Midnight Chats. This one is with Arlo Parks.
I was shooting this kind of, it's a collection of short films for Gucci, basically. And it was directed by Gus Van Sant and Alessandro. Yeah, it was pretty crazy. It was wild.
So this is like, because the first one, you directed the first one, right?
Yeah.
So this is a series called the Absolute Beginner series, right?
Yeah, so the Absolute Beginner series was the one that I did by myself, and that was just getting like artists and actors to kind of get behind the camera and honestly just make a film about whatever they wanted. And I was always super inspired by like Wes Anderson, you know, Grand Budapest Hotel, Royal Tenenbaums. And I wanted, obviously poetry is like my first love, so I wanted to combine that in some way and get all these kind of kooky Margate characters and get the sea. I always wanted to shoot by the sea. So yeah, it was amazing.
It was. Is it called Folded Gold?
No. Knotted Gold.
Knotted gold.
There we go.
Knotted Gold. It's great. It's got that great opening shot of you on the balcony. Is it the
Walpole Hotel?
The Walpole Hotel. Yeah. And there's the people playing bowls.
Yeah.
It has got a real Wes Anderson vibe.
Yeah, I wanted it to feel, you know, with those very like specific color schemes, like in Morelli's with the pinks and the reds.
Yeah.
And And I wanted it to feel, yeah, a little bit surreal. But I also wanted to involve like the people who just lived in Margate, like the bowls team were just such legends.
Yeah.
Like they were just so down to just like play their bowls and be the intro. It was really cool.
And it ends with you chucking a Gucci bag in the sea.
Yeah.
Did you actually chuck it in the sea?
No.
Is there someone down there catching that bag?
No, it was another bag.
Oh, was it?
It was another bag. Because, you know, we wouldn't be chucking £1,000 worth of Gucci material into the
I was going to say that is decadent. That would be very decadent to do that. And it ends, that video, I'll put a link to this in the description of this podcast. It ends with the bag kind of floating out at sea. Yeah. There's a hand coming out of the sea.
Yeah.
So who was that unfortunate person who was under
that
the waves?
Tom Dream, who co-directed the film with me. That was his girlfriend. And she just put a wetsuit on. It was cold.
Yeah.
And she just got in there. I really commended her bravery because I was shivering and I was not even in the water. But yeah, she had to fully duck underneath the wetsuit and hold it up.
It's a great final shot.
Yeah, I wanted it to be like a message because, you know, there's a point where I like scribble something down, put it in the bag and like almost like, you know, a message in the bottle, like putting it at sea. But yeah, it was like my first experience doing anything like that. And it was a lot of fun.
So this new one you were doing in Rome,
yeah.
Is that like a follow-up to this one?
No, it's actually a different thing. Yeah, it's a way for like the new collection to be showcased in a way that's kind of a little bit left of center. So it's basically 7 episodes. There's like a cameo in each one. So there was me, Harry Styles, Billie Eilish, and a few other people just kind of thrown in into the narrative. And my episode is in this cafe and it's kind of inspired by Andy Warhol's Naked Lunch and Gus Van Sant was directing it and Chris Doyle was the DOP. He's done a lot of the Wong Kar Wai films, which was amazing. I was so starstruck. I was like, 'cause I had to act. I was like acting.
So you got lines in it?
No, I didn't. That's the thing. I had to improvise. I had to improvise my lines, which is the hard bit. 'Cause you know, I had to, so Sylvia was the character that I was playing opposite and I would speak in English and she would speak in Italian. But we had to pretend as if it was like a normal conversation. Obviously, I didn't understand what she was saying, but I had to be like, ha ha ha, like, yeah.
Great.
Yeah, it was
did
great.
Do you feel like you nailed it?
Did
you get to see any of it back?
No.
Okay, right.
So it could have been terrible. But,
I'm sure it's not. I'm sure it's good. And what was Gus Van Sant like?
He was a very kind of quiet, sensitive, confident presence. Like he was quite subdued, but he knew exactly what he wanted. And Chris was more kind of like explosive. Like he taught me how to play pinball and we were just like laughing the whole time. So it was amazing to have those two like quite juxtaposed presences, but both like icons of cinema.
Yeah. Have you done any acting before at all, like at school or anything?
I did like a few bits of school, not really. But you know, in some of my videos, like for Eugene, I was acting alongside this actress Amelia, and you know, obviously we had to pretend to be like to have known each other forever, and it's something I really enjoy. I love it. It's so interesting, like putting on that mask and like being somebody else for a little bit. I really like it.
Nice. I love that you've just gone straight from zero to Gus Van Sant for Gucci in Rome.
Yeah.
During lockdown. What was the lockdown situation like there?
It was pretty literally the day we arrived, everything closed.
Oh,
so
really?
Everything I think was closed from like 5 or 6, for example. So I was staying in the hotel. So I wasn't allowed to leave. All I did was, you know, make beats in my hotel room and read my book. And so it was literally hotel to set to hotel. So I saw the Colosseum like from afar, but didn't really get to see that much of Rome, to be honest.
Your film had like, as you said, had like a Wes Anderson vibe to it. But you're also a horror film fan, right?
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about horror film. I'm kind of the opposite of a horror film fan.
Oh, you're not into it?
I can't. But tell me about what horror are we talking about? What's your kind of thing?
What's my thing? Okay. So it kind of depends, right? So I really like the kind of Hitchcock, like Psycho.
I love that. See, I'm in on that.
There we go. So I like the more kind of stylistic violence-y ones. I do like the kind of psychological thrillers as well. Like, I mean, I recently watched Hereditary, and like, you know, Midsommar and stuff, like they're in a similar kind of vein.
Yeah.
And so I like the ones that are like slightly kooky, or, you know, really old ones where the special effects are terrible. I don't like zombie ones. I'm not really down for that. I like the Silence of the Lambs, kind of like psychological horrors.
Oh, okay. No, I'm okay. So, that's where I'm at. Yeah, so I do like something.
I mean, I've seen, you know, things like Friday the 13th and all of that. I watched The Human Centipede, which was a terrible mistake, and I don't know why I did that to myself. Because it was just gross. But I like ones where there's like a storyline and you know you're a little bit on edge, rather than it's just like someone getting like hacked to death.
Yeah,
like,
so you're not into Saw.
Well, I've seen it, but I just didn't really vibe with it. Like, I didn't find it enjoyable.
No.
You know, I was just a bit like,
just something to endure. And
yeah, you're enduring it. Exactly. Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, I mean, that type of stuff, I like the thriller side of things and stuff. Are there any of those films that you've watched that have stuck with you?
I think the first time I watched Silence of the Lambs, definitely, because like Anthony Hawk, I was just very taken aback by how good he was at playing that role. And like, you know, with the like that sound he makes when he's talking about the beans and stuff. Oh my God. I think what I really liked, like Psycho, I feel like the twist at the end was like, I don't know, I found it super inventive and like progressive, like for the time. Like, I didn't expect that at all. I definitely think my favorite films are the ones that just like have stuck with me forever and ever.
Mm. The one that haunts me of recent years is Get Out.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, I've not seen Us.
Mm.
And part of the reason I've not seen Us is because Get Out, just, I was talking to a friend about this the other day, I still think about it every now and then.
Mm.
Like, it's one of those things that are just, just the premise of it.
Yeah.
That's much more horrific than Saw or...
No, know. I'm with you, because it is that sense of like, when there is that little grain or kernel of like reality or possibility, like the fact that that could actually, you know, that's what makes it scarier. Because if it's like, you know, some kind of supernatural, like, you know, I saw like Annabelle or like those like Chucky and stuff, and it's a bit like, you know, that wouldn't happen. But when things like Get Out, where there is that sense of like of tension, like the tension is established so expertly,
and so it's it's so slow, the reveal of what's going on.
I know. And when he's like crying and it's just like,
it's horrible.
It's like you're sinking, and he's like, boom. Oh wow.
And the bit where they reveal what's going on, where the picture of him is on the easel and they're auctioning him. And it's just so that, like, the camera, he's been taken off for a walk to get him out of the way. And, that moment of realization.
It's that the premise of that film, that is an excellent film. Yeah,
absolutely stuck with me. I mean, when did you get into, have you always liked the horror stuff?
No, see, okay. This is the story. When I was 8 or 9, I saw Coraline and it terrified me to the extent that I never watched a horror film again until I was like 16. That's not even a horror film, but I was absolutely terrified of dolls. I didn't like dolls. I didn't like the buttons on the eyes. I was very traumatized. And then when I was 16, I watched, I can't remember what, I think it was like The Shining or something.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, like, even though I wasn't that taken by The Shining, controversial opinion. I liked that sense of tension. And then I watched things like Seven and just kind of got into the more like psychological side of things. And then I thought, you know, why not watch some of the gory ones? It just didn't do that much for me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I just found it.
Yeah, that kind of good to laugh at, I guess, if you watch it with a mate and you're just like laughing at how absolutely absurd it
is. Exactly, exactly.
That's kind of where that's at. So we're currently in... What? I don't even know what the date is anymore. November. We're in November time. For anyone listening in the future, we're in November time. We're getting towards the end of 2020. Your album comes out in January.
In January. Uh-huh.
You are currently well and truly in promo mode, right? Mm-hmm. You've been super busy.
Yeah.
But you've actually had, I was thinking about all the things you've been doing over lockdown. I didn't realize that the album, which we'll talk about in a bit, but you wrote that during lockdown one here in the UK.
Yeah, like most of it, a little bit before and a little bit after.
But sure. Yeah. But there's loads of things you've done whilst a lot of us have been locked in, really. You played Glastonbury.
Yeah.
And obviously there was no Glastonbury this year. For anyone who was not aware of this, there was obviously no Glastonbury, but a few people went and played and they had like a little bit of coverage.
Mm.
And it looked amazing on TV because it was you... in front of the pyramid stage. Yep. There were cows there.
Yeah.
The pyramid was just like a skeleton. Mm. It looked beautiful. It was a lovely day.
Mm.
It looked weird to see Glastonbury have some grass on the floor.
Yeah.
That was bizarre.
Yeah, it was just mud.
How was the experience? Because you went to Glastonbury the year before to mm-hmm. play when it was in full swing.
Yeah.
Right? And that
yeah,
was your
yeah.
first Glastonbury.
Yeah. I mean, that was my first festival.
Okay.
It
wow.
was
okay.
Insane. Yeah.
This is a theme. You just go, you're just going straight
just going
for like
straight,
big things.
Yeah. Straight in the deep end. But yeah, that was amazing. Especially, you know, the sun was setting. I was singing Black Dog, which is a really important song to me, you know, on the TV, like my parents were watching from home. And it felt like it was very surreal. It was kind of bittersweet because, you know, I remember being at Glastonbury last year and running around and playing all these shows and, you know, seeing Tame Impala live for the first time and all of that. But it did, like, the actual ground has so much energy. Like, actually being there just reminded me of, like, the possibility of festivals next year and like how special live music really is.
Sure. You know? Mm. What was the crew situation? Was there a lot of people there? It looked really sparse on
yeah,
TV.
Yeah, there weren't that many people there, honestly. Yeah. Probably like 10 or so.
Wow. Mm. That's kind of creepy, right?
Yeah, it was eerily quiet as well.
And were there other, because a few other people played.
Yeah.
A handful of like new artists.
Yeah.
Were they there when you were there?
No, they weren't there. No, it okay, was, so right. It was literally just me, my manager and my guitarist wow. and someone from Transgressive, Mike. So that was, yeah, it was nice to like, you know, have a little road trip down. But I remember last year, you know, we were listening to like Princess Nokia and like shouting in the van, like so excited. So it was definitely a big contrast.
So when you went last year, first festival,
mm-hmm.
did you do the whole thing? Did you just stay the whole
yeah,
weekend?
Yeah, I played four times. I've never experienced anything like it.
Yeah.
Because it's weird, like all these different kinds of people just in this kind of bubble of music, like everyone just kind of is in a good mood because everyone's in the sun, especially with sunny, thank
yeah.
God. It's almost too hot.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just kind of ignited my love of festivals. Not my love of camping, though. I'm definitely not a camping
person. No, me neither. And Glastonbury's, I've not been to Glastonbury for a good 10 years.
Mm.
But I watch it religiously on TV.
Yeah.
And every year I'm kind of think, I really miss out. I feel I'm really missing out. I always want to be there and I always intend to go the following year. And I was going to go this year, but obviously it was cancelled. How are you with FOMO?
I feel like at the beginning, when everything kind of dissolved, obviously I was like, oh, I was supposed to be going here, there, doing this, that. But then I kind of just like, I don't know, as we were saying before, like it's amazing what people can get used to. I was just like, oh, well, I guess it's not happening. So I might as well just like write some songs.
Yeah.
And
it's kind of felt all right, hasn't it? That we're all, at least we're all miserable.
Mm. Right? Yeah, to be fair, it's like a collective misery. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, well, I mean, I am missing out, but so's everyone. Mm. You're kind of not missing out on anything right now.
Yeah, that's true. It's so weird though, how the world just shifted like in a few months.
Yeah, it's crazy. So you were saying that you rented an Airbnb kind of close to here down the road in Hoxton you recorded there,
yeah,
on there
yeah,
as
yeah.
well. So you just set up a little studio in there and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't much of a, it was literally a mic, guitar, bass, and like one of these little MIDI keyboards and a computer. And that was literally what the whole record was made on, to be honest.
What? That's
yeah.
mad.
So we made, yeah, I would say we made like five or six of the songs that during that period of time. And then afterwards, I made one of the tunes in the church with Paul Epworth. And then he helped me like develop one of my demos, which is another one of the songs, Portrait 400. And then Bad Sounds down in Bristol helped me work on Bluish. So yeah, but it was mainly made in apartments, which I love. I'm
yeah.
definitely not that much of a studio person. Like I like my comfort and my tea and my
yeah, sure.
windows. Studios don't have windows.
Right. And I suppose there's no pressure, right? When you're in a, I mean, when I go to a, if I ever go to a recording studio to interview someone, whatever, I went to Paul Epworth to do a podcast with him. And it is, I do get really excited being in that room and seeing the big desk. And
yeah.
I'm like a child in there. But I can imagine there's a pressure because there's a time limit.
Mm.
Like, you know that this is costing money. It's costing
Definitely.
Someone money.
Definitely.
And you're like, I need to get some results out of this.
Yeah, you're right. It is so hard. Like, when I was writing the album before, like I had this sense of like stress and expectation. And like, I was just like, I need to make this good. Like there are people like not relying on me, but like, you know, I'm signed and like all these people working on my project, like I need to make this good. And I think that desire to make something, because, you know, I listen to the albums that I love. You know, if you're listening to like In Rainbows, Dummy, all of this stuff, I was like, oh my God, I need to make something like groundbreaking. And then I was like, mate, I'm like 19 years old. Like, I can't make To Pimp a Butterfly on my first album, you know? And I think once I let go of that sense of pressure that I was putting on myself, then it just kind of came flowing out, you know?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. You've got to leave yourself somewhere to go as well.
Yeah, you're right.
You know? And, hey, it's great. The record's great. We were just saying, I've heard it. I've played it a lot, and it's one of those records. I sound like I'm on Radio One now. It's one of those records that's it's really instant. It's like instantly. It's like a no-brainer record. This is all great, isn't it?
Oh.
And it's so melodic and lovely.
Oh, thank you.
I think that's maybe one of the reasons I'm surprised it was written in lockdown, because it. I mean, obviously, some of the stuff on there is kind of heavy and serious stuff, and it's super personal to you. But there's a kind of breeziness to it, and the tunes of it, and the pace of it.
No, I agree with you. I think the reason why is that those songs on the record, like most of them were written in terms of like the melody and the lyrics in like under an hour, like in like 30 minutes. I always just, I don't know, when I hear some chords or whatever that I'm taken by, I just literally just sing the melody into my voice notes almost in one go. And I just write all in one go. Like I have a little notebook where I wrote all the lyrics for the album. And often it is just written just like straight down as it was in the final song. That sense of like writing off instinct.
Yeah.
It's just an impulse and I just follow it. Okay. And then I'm like, oh, I guess it's quite good.
And does that come from, because poetry is a big love of yours.
Yeah.
Were you writing poetry way before you were writing songs?
Yeah. So I started off with writing short stories when I was like 8 or something. I've just always loved words. And then I went to poetry when I was 13, and then lyrics, yeah.
What were your short stories about as an 8-year-old?
It was so funny. I unearthed one the other day. It was, one of them was like kind of like Bonnie and Clyde vibes. Like it was called like The Highway Kids or something. And it was like these two kids who were like highway robbers, and they were like running from the law. But then... And then I don't really understand, because I loved words, so the plots were like not very good. It was mainly just me opening a thesaurus and just adding massive words I didn't really understand. but there was a lot, I guess, about like escaping and running around and like going to other countries. And like, I think it's because as a kid, I mean, you know, I live in like West London, kind of out of the way. Not that I was bored, but like I was kind of craving that sense of like adventure when I was a kid. And so all my stories were like that. They were quite intense, yeah.
I love those stories that kids write, because kids just have no rules at all. They just do whatever they want. I've mentioned this on this podcast before, but my wife used to write stories as a kid.
Ah.
And but her thing would be she'd get bored very quickly.
Right.
So she'd just kill everyone in the story. All her stories end up, everyone dies.
Wow.
I'm sure there's some deep psychological issue going on there underneath that. But she says it's just because she'd get bored of like the act of it.
I mean, I can definitely relate to that. Like my attention span is very short. I think that's why I moved on to poetry, because I couldn't really follow a thread for like pages and pages. Like I would get to the end of like 2 pages and I'd be like, well, kind of had enough of this now. So I would just like finish it really quickly, like in a way that didn't make sense.
Just get it done.
Yeah.
Do you, I'm going to drop a name here.
Okay.
Because this happened recently to me. So it's fresh in my mind.
Okay.
It is relevant, I promise.
Okay.
I interviewed John Cooper Clarke two weeks ago. And we were talking about poetry, obviously.
Mm.
And he was telling me about how he was taught poetry in school.
Mm.
And it was a big thing. And all the guys, he said, in his class would kind of use poetry as a bit of a show of their macho, their manliness, to try and get the girls in the class. This is in, so he's 71 now. This is in 65, he said. So back then they'd go to poetry classes in his school, which was just a state school. He'd be taught all this poetry, and then they would write poems and try and like kind of bat, like almost like rappers.
Okay.
You know? And I was like, that's kind of crazy, because my school, and when I was like, you know, 15 in like in the 90s, we did no poetry.
Mm.
What is the deal now? Like when you were at school, which is, you know, like five years ago. Or last year.
Yeah, last year. It fully was last year, yeah.
when What was the curriculum? Is poetry a thing, or was this just off your own back of like, this is my thing?
Well, when I started, when I was like young, like 13 or whatever, then we weren't really taught it that much. But as I got older, it was definitely part of the curriculum, but it was more kind of, you know, Shakespearean sonnets and like romantic poetry, like Byron and stuff. And we did some modern poetry as well a little bit, because I studied English at A level. But it definitely wasn't, the poetry that I learned at school was definitely not the poetry that I gravitated towards and that I was inspired by when I was writing. Like when I was younger, I would read a lot of like the beat poets, so like Gregory Corso and like Allen Ginsberg, all of that, and you know, Sylvia Plath and all the kind of other confessional poets. But we were taught it was quite a rigid thing, you know, with the rhyme schemes and all of this. But I just didn't really like that. Yeah. I wasn't good at that.
When was the first time you performed poetry to people?
Oh, as in like on stage or like read it to someone?
Has that only ever been at your shows and since being a musician? Did you go for a period of being a...
Yeah, no. I was never like a spoken word. Yeah. But no. I think I was too nervous for that.
Yeah, it's very...
can be intense
raw
to listen to as well. Like you've got to like, you know, sometimes it's a little bit like, I think it's about execution, right? Like at the headline shows, I would like write a poem that day about the city, and it was like short, you know, 30 seconds. And so it was like a nice little interlude. But sometimes, you know, when it like goes on for like 15 minutes and it's just like a monologue, just like shouting.
Yeah.
Like,
that's not you.
That's not the vibe, no.
So the record, as mm-hmm. I say, super personal, mm-hmm. Very poetic. And like a big thing that you love is nostalgia.
Yeah.
I'm really nostalgic as well. Do you feel you've got a handle on your nostalgia?
I definitely think I do.
That's good. I sometimes question mine.
Yeah, I think, you know, the way that I approach nostalgia, it's not necessarily, you know, the idea of like looking at the past through a rose-tinted lens for me. It's more like, I mean, this whole album for me was about almost like processing the past and discussing the traumas and the joys, but like I tried to do it in a way that wasn't kind of tainted by hindsight, which of course is impossible, but I wanted to kind of reconjure up how I felt in that moment. And also because I was in lockdown, you know, I wasn't really, nothing was happening in the present. So, and I always wanted my debut album to be like a time capsule of the things that affected me and moved me and hurt me like throughout my adolescence. So that's kind of how I looked at it.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
King Crawl, I was going to ask you about. That was a moment for you, right? Mm. Like a bit of a light bulb moment. Is that safe to say?
Yeah, definitely. So 6 Feet Beneath the Moon came out when I was 13. And it was a moment where the stars kind of aligned for me creatively. I heard this voice that was literally like gravel and grit and like dark London skies, and I heard this like poetry and this rawness, and the fact that the instrumentals were often like quite kind of stripped down and simple, but there was this sense of like pure emotion to me. And I just loved it. I think it was the first time that I discovered an album made recently for myself that I was completely obsessed with. There was also this album called I Thought I Was an Alien by Soko, which was around a similar time. I think I just discovered like the idea of like super emotional music that I didn't really know could be executed by, you know, like people my age and in that way.
Yeah.
And that was just immediately like, boom, like this is what I want to do.
And it's such a like, it's such an important thing, that moment when you discover music for you by like when you're not living off of someone else's golden era.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
So how did you, was it a thing that everyone was listening to at your school? Can you remember how you came across that record?
No, absolutely not. So the way that I discovered it was that there was this cool girl in my class who had like cool taste. Like I just remember thinking that she was like the coolest thing ever. And she introduced me to Loyal Khana and King Krul. She was like, oh, you should listen to these guys. And I was really taken by both of them. And we had to give a presentation in school about an artist that we liked. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do King Krul. Like, let's do it. And I remember putting it, like, you know, putting all this work into like the research and stuff. And then like playing like Baby Blue or something. And everyone in the class like didn't get it. And they were like, what is, I don't really understand this. And I think at that moment, that
what
was
what were they choosing for their presentations?
I don't know what they were picking. They were picking like Kylie Minogue or something. I don't know. Like it was just not, I realized I was on a slightly different wave, you know, it's like a little Fallout Boy and a lot of, I mean, I did like that as well. But for me, it was a moment where I was like, okay, not everyone is going to like what I like. Not everyone is going to like what I do. So I might as well just kind of follow my taste and do my thing.
So you were kind of out on your own with the cool girl. She was into it as well, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
But you were like in the minority at your school in terms of your tastes.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I didn't really talk about music with my friends. Like I only actually encountered other people who loved music in the same way that I did when I was about 16 or 17 when I was at college. But at the beginning, music was very much my own kind of personal my personal world. Like writing was this private ritual that I did at home. Like I would look up on YouTube, like find new songs and stuff, but I never really told anyone about it.
Yeah.
Even my family, I just kind of did it by myself.
It's just your little thing.
Mm.
Can you remember what your first song was?
I remember it, but I have no idea what it was about.
Okay.
Like, I remember just like thrashing on the guitar. I think I listened to like something by Slow Dive or something like that. And I was like, wow, like I need to just like make something emotional. And it was just, the lyrics were, I don't remember the lyrics, but I remember at the time I was like, listen,
this is it.
Like, this is groundbreaking.
I've got something to say. And I'm saying it well.
Literally. Literally, yeah.
So what did, after King Krul, what did that open up for you? Once you went from him, where did you go after that?
Honestly, I went to a million different places at once. So I got into like the Pixies and the Stooges and stuff. I got really into Sly and the Family Stone. Got really into like Elliot Smith, John Martin, Nick Drake. I also explored the more like soul roots, like Nina Simone and Minnie Riperton. And then I found Portishead and the whole kind of trip hop, like Massive Attack, Tricky and stuff, which was so eye opening for me. People like DJ Shadow. I got really into electronic music as well. So like Aphex Twin and Joy Orbison and stuff. So honestly, I just went everywhere at once.
You just went through. It was like opened this portal to.
Exactly.
To possibilities.
Mm, exactly.
It's great, isn't it, that like one thing can just do that for you. And it, actually, I think it probably, I'm not sure that necessarily everyone does that. I think some people might have heard King Krul and then stuck in that world. Although maybe King Krul is the key to it, because he's a guy that is just like an encyclopedia of music himself. And you can kind of tell that in his music.
Definitely.
Even though he's got a very definite sound, that he, if you'd discovered, I don't know, just a guitar guy or just a rapper, then maybe you would have just stuck in that lane.
I think for me, it was the way that I approached it was, okay, I've discovered something that's unlike anything I've ever heard. And it makes me really, feel really good to know that there's something other than what I've already heard out there. So I wanted to kind of keep reincarnating that feeling, keep finding that in other places, which is why I just kind of went super broad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're a Radiohead fan?
Oh my God.
You're a big Radiohead fan, right? Yes. I say that because what makes me think that was there's just a few. And what I love about your songs is there's like references and little name drops of things that I like and know. I think it's in the Gucci film, the first Gucci film, where you mentioned Kid A in that. You mentioned Tom York. Is it in
her? Yeah, quoting Tom York. Yeah. In Too Good. Yeah. I love them.
So that came after.
That came after. I think I was like 16, 17.
Okay.
And that was actually a really beautiful time in my life because that was when I really found my people in terms of finding other creatives. Like I went to college and there were people who wanted to be painters, directors, and my best friend Matthew showed me Weird Fishers. And obviously I knew Radiohead, but after that I was like, oh my God. Like listening to songs like Nude, it just changed the way that I saw music. Like it was like a seismic shift. And then I got obsessed.
So is In Rainbows your Radiohead?
Well, you know, I enjoy all of it. Like I really like Hail to the Thief and like the bends for like a certain mood as well. And obviously Idiotech is like one of my tops. But In Rainbows, if I had to pick just one, like as my favorite, just like the warmth of it and the guitars. Oh, it's just perfect. I listen to it every day. I'm serious.
Do you?
Every day.
Great.
Yeah.
I love that. That's great. I like it when someone's got an album that they just still can't get over.
Yeah.
Like they're still fascinated by it and love it. Mm. I love In Rainbows. And the bends, I'm a sucker for the bends.
Yeah.
That's the one that Radiohead fans aren't meant to say they like.
No, I like it. I don't care. I love
it's
that.
Good,
love
right? It's good, right? It's good. You and Phoebe Bridgers.
Mm-hmm.
I was watching your cover of Fake Plastic Trees.
Yes.
For the BBC. Where was that filmed? That was like in a big church.
Yeah, it was filmed in a church. I can't remember what it was called now, but it was like a church in North London.
Sure.
And we filmed that. Yeah, we filmed that over like a few months ago.
That was Phoebe came on the podcast a few weeks ago. Oh, we actually had to do it twice because I forgot to press record.
No.
I know, it's bad, isn't it?
No.
That's really bad. And I think it would have been actually probably just before you did that thing because it was when she was here. She's very funny.
Yeah.
She's fun. Is. Have you known her for a while? Like,
no.
Or did you just meet her? Did you just meet her then?
Well, so we had kind of chatted on Instagram and, you know, she had said she was a fan. Obviously, I'm a massive fan. Like Stranger in the Alps was one of the albums for me specifically in terms of the lyrics.
Yeah.
Like that sense of hyper-specificity and that wittiness. Like I could, even though it was very kind of, there were moments where it was very somber and heavy, like there was that sense of like cutting wit that I could ascertain. And then we had met up like a little bit before to like hang out and then we rehearsed and then we played the session.
We did it. It sounded great. Album's out in January.
Yeah.
How are you feeling about it?
Nervous, very nervous, excited, slightly apprehensive. I'm just going to go through all the adjectives. I think I'm excited. I'm excited for it to be out in the world. But then there is that sense of like, oh my God, like maybe I should have just put one more song on, or maybe I should take that one off, or did I say everything, or is that lyric even any good? Like, I think when you have it finished, so easy to like unpick it. But I definitely think that I put as much of myself into the album that I possibly and physically could. So I hope people like it. Because I love albums. That's the thing. And like, and obviously there's that sense of like, I want to create something that has like value and meaning and that's going to be important to people. But no, you never know. Like maybe I'm just going to, maybe it'll be terrible. Maybe it'll be great.
It's going to be great. It's going to be great. And then I guess next year, you don't really know, right? It's like, what's going to happen next year?
Exactly. I'm definitely taking it like one day at a time. Yeah. Just because it feels like everything can just shift like within 24 hours anyway.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll see.
Well, hopefully the new vaccine's going to arrive.
Yeah.
We're all going to be cured.
Yeah.
Donald Trump will leave office.
Yeah.
Everything's going to be fine.
Yeah.
Your album's going to come out.
Yeah.
It's going to sell millions.
Yes. I'm loving this premise.
And you'll make a movie with, who would you most like to make a movie with?
Oh my God. Wes Anderson.
Wes Anderson will cast you in his new film.
There we go.
Starring alongside.
Oh my God, that's so hard. Starring alongside Robert De Niro.
Perfect.
Boom. Sorted.
2021, your year.
Love it.
Anyway, good night.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.